The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. In the office, there's a calendar that's still up from last year in the back corner of the Zendo. It's got a picture of a duck sitting on this sheet of ice. Very much not what it feels like today on January 19th, is that right? We've got this 12th. Thank you. There we go. Even more so. You know, we've got this spring day outside, feels like. And on the altar, if you have a chance before you go, you should look at this beautiful flower arrangement. It's stunning. It really does feel like spring. And when we chant, we vow to realize the Tathagata's true meaning. Tathagata is another name for the Buddha, right? It means the one who returns to thusness, returns to suchness, returns to this. Right, this beautiful morning, this beautiful chanting, the sounds of the temple bell. And we've been realizing this true meaning all morning. You know, in the going away, rehearsing, reflecting, and then coming back to suchness, to this moment, throughout your zazen. In our Kenyan, all day. My name is Fugan, and I came down this morning from Massachusetts, from Cape Cod, where I practice with an affiliate of the Village Zendo called Hyannis Zendo, and we're a small group. If we get practitioners in the double digits, it feels really crowded in there. But you guys would feel at home, you know, it's not separate from what we do here. And coming here, I also feel like I'm with my family, you know, right back home. And so I encourage you to come visit us out on the Cape. And I saw some of you at Sesshin just about almost three weeks ago, winter Sesshin, and others I haven't seen in some time, and some of us are just sitting together for the first time. So, Happy New Year, everyone. That Sesshin started our Ango practice period, which is our winter intensive period, 90 days of where we boost up our practice. And Ango means peaceful dwelling. You know, in the midst of everything, peaceful dwelling. It's good to remember that. At least I like to remember that once in a while. And this Ango, we have a brilliant study text called Zen Echoes. And it's gives us a glimpse of this world of Zen in 12th and 17th century China. And the book is made up of commentaries on 40-plus very well-known koans. And the commentaries are by three women Zen masters, one from the 12th century and two later Zen masters, who are communicating with each other across that time and communicating with us right into this moment, into this suchness. And it's a gift to have this text to work with, and I'm grateful to the Village Zendo that we're doing this. Grateful to Enkyo Roshi and to our Shuso and to everyone that we have this chance to delve into this world. And to Beata Grant, the translator, author of this volume, the facilitator of it, I guess. She recently also before this Zen Echoes book, wrote a book called Eminent Nuns, Women Chan Masters of 17th Century China. And in that book, she introduces Miao Zong, the 12th century nun, Biaoqi and Zhukui, the two 17th century Zen masters that we've been studying. And she puts them into this more detailed context. And especially these 17th century Zen masters are fleshed out for us in that earlier work of Bieta Grant. And the world she shares surprised me. It's populated by these fierce and devoted women Zen students and teachers. It's also populated by female poets and literati, women calligraphers and painters and scholars of Zen. And they interact with the male community as teachers and students and compatriots in their work, but they also create a space for themselves in China. And it's more than I expected, just sort of from this, you know, 21st century perspective. I don't know why. But they create the spaces for practice and for finding balance in their world, in their lives. And in this book, Bieta Grant recounts their lives, and especially this one matriarch who was the teacher of a number of different Zen masters in that century. And her name is Kuiyuan Shingan, something like that. And she lived this life of Zen, of teaching, but also of organizing a community, a sangha. And the name of her community was Lion Subduing Chan Cloister. Lion Subduing Zen Monastery. And she had over 100 female Zen practitioners in that community. It was all women. And they were one among a number of cloisters or female monasteries at the time. And this teacher took care of that sangha. She did fundraising, outreach. She really looked after the lay and ordained and the grounds and facilities, all the kind of business of being an abbot. So I guess it should have sounded familiar to me. I guess I shouldn't have been so surprised. And so in the brief time since our winter session, it feels like a lot has happened since just before New Year's. We've got, our government in kind of crisis mode that it's been in, but amped up right to the edge of war, in fact. And it feels cynical and casual how closely we came to an all-out conflagration. And even though we didn't roll over into this war yet, lives were lost and continue to be. People dying as a result of greed, anger, and ignorance. People suffering. And of course, we've got this ongoing environmental tragedy. I heard, I think yesterday, that 20 of the last 22 years were the hottest 20 years on record. So it's a beautiful spring day on January 12th. And, of course, Australia is burning. 28 people so far, they know, have perished, 28 humans, and maybe a billion animals have died in this fire, a billion lives. And so we come here and we create a space for for balance in this world that can seem so out of balance. You know, a space where we come face to face with ourselves, with this suchness, with the suffering in the world, with our suffering in our lives, not separate. It's not a Sunday morning of distraction, although we get distracted and we come back. You know, we don't run away. We didn't run away because we're here. And it takes courage, great courage, this practice. In her talk during Sesshin, Roshi Joshin highlighted what she called the exquisite attention we give to our Zen practice. The care in which we create and maintain this container. And it's this exactly this attention that is the space we need. It's this attention that creates the stability for encountering the world as it is. And this is the space we need for transformation. Earlier this week at our little Zendo on the Cape, we had a memorial service, a 49-day memorial for the father of one of our longtime practitioners. And afterwards, another practitioner shared with me her experience of this memorial service, this service honoring the death of someone else's father. And she told me that it gave her this space to really encounter grief in her own life, from the loss of a niece very recently and her son as well. You know, it's just great courage to go there, to be there. And this container is what facilitates that, this space. The container built out of forms and practices, you know, sitting down for zazen, when the bell rings, mindfully moving into our kinhin. When we chant, we're just chanting, bowing, gassho, straightening the cushion and caring for the space, you know, all these forms, returning to suchness. So today I want to talk about balance and imbalance, I guess. So we're sitting here upright and we're balanced. Now, it looks different in all of us, this balance, but it's balance in our bodies. It's active kind of balancing. This sense of uprightness in relation to the world in which we're part of. And I think of it as active, not static, even though we've been sitting still, supposedly, all morning. The analogy that comes to mind for me is riding a bike when I think about balance. You know, when you start off, those first few pedals, you're not quite there yet, but once you get moving, you're settled into this sense of balance, right? On these two thin little wheels rolling down the street, it's pretty amazing. And then when you get to your stop sign, you stop, and if you don't take your feet off the pedal right away, you feel this sense of imbalance, of unease. Right? The flow is part of the balance when you're on a bicycle. And in Zazen, we're balancing in this moment, this threshold moment, this suchness, thusness. It's the threshold of now, I've heard someone say that. I don't know that that resonates with me so much. I think maybe, being on the crest of the wave of now, maybe because I live in a place surrounded by water, that resonates with me a little better. But it is flowing along, the flow of our breath, the movement of our body with our breath, our mind moving away and us bringing it back into this moment over and over again. It's flowing, this balance. And of course, in Kinyin, we're flowing. This is our moving Zen meditation. I looked up the characters for Kinyin yesterday, and the first of those two characters that make up the word Kinyin comes from the straight thread, as in a loom. And it also has a secondary meaning of sutra. And as we were walking here in this beautiful pattern, I had this impression, we're kind of threading together this Dharma. And the second character means to walk or move forward. So this sutra in motion. Of course, that's just a lot of talk about walking. And when we're walking, we're just walking. We're balanced in this movement together, like cloth woven together. So in Buddhism, we talk about the typical five sense organs and realms. All right, the eyes see, the ears hear, nose smells, tongue tastes, body touches. And we also add the mind to that, which reacts to these other senses, and also to emotions that arise and thoughts that arise. So these senses, or these organs and realms of senses, and the responses are thought of as groups of six sense organs, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, six realms of the senses, and six sense consciousnesses. And together, this is how we experience the world. And I think we could think of balance as well and consider it as a sense, right? Balance resides in a sense organ in our inner ear. And it manifests in our orientation in the world, in our body's uprightness. And like the other senses, it gives rise to a consciousness. We're conscious of our balance in Zazen, whether we're sitting upright or we're a little bit less upright, straight or messy. We're still in this consciousness of our body orientation in the world. Maybe in Kinyin, it's sometimes more obvious. At our Zendo on the Cape, since it's such a small space, we only do slow Kinyin. And every once in a while, as you're taking this slow step with your breath, you fall off that edge of balance, and you notice it. That consciousness comes to life. Like when the truck passes, your ear consciousness comes to life. And once we notice it, this body orientation in relation to the world can become quite an important means of relating to the world. And like our other senses, of course, we understand balance metaphorically. When we say, I see, it can also mean I understand, I hear you, right? I'm grasping, I'm paying attention. When we say, oh, I'm feeling balanced today, we feel like our psyche, our mind is in balance. at ease, settled. And I've been thinking about balance in relation to some work I've been doing with some West African musicians. And in reading up about some of the music, I found that some writing about Anglo Ewe speakers in West Africa. This is a group of people who live in Benin, Togo, Ghana, that area of West Africa. And in this particular ethnic group, balance is privileged as a sense and seen as a central part of human ways of knowing or being in the world. And so children there and in other, also other ethnic groups in the region, grow up being encouraged to actively balance. Toddlers are encouraged to carry bowls and pans on their heads. Children going to school carry their books on their heads, balanced upright, and desks sometimes as well. I remember when I spent some time living in West Africa, and I remember working with some friends, young guys, when I was also a young guy, in this village working on a water project. And we were carrying these very heavy steel pipes from one part of the village to another. And so three of these guys would take the pipe and put it on their head and, you know, walk kind of easily and beautifully across the village. And when I tried to help, of course, I couldn't figure that part out, and I was on my shoulder, and it was just a disaster. I didn't have that upbringing, that balance in body. An anthropologist named Catherine Gertz has been studying the cultural specificity of senses. And she talks about the Ewe of West Africa, where she says balance is considered a defining characteristic of mature persons and the human species in general. And balance is also seen in the musical forms. Robert Ferris Thompson, another scholar of Africa and the African diaspora, has called this sense an aesthetic of the cool in African arts and in the diaspora of African arts. This cool is, he says, it's a cool of creative matters, full of motion and brilliance. The cool, as Gertz said, in which things just pass right through you. And in the complex polyrhythms and dance moves and tension and fiery drumming and music in West Africa, the mind and body maintain this aesthetic of the cool, this sense of balance. That's the only way you could really do it. So balance is a part of daily life. Shows up in ritual ceremonies where sacred items are balanced and moved around in an upright position, often carried on the head. And it's located in people's bodies and in their internal orientation, this idea of the cool, of the balanced. In the Fukan Zanzenji, Dogen instructs us to sit straight up without leaning left or right and without bending forward or backwards. The ears should be in line with the shoulders and the nose in line with the navel. Take a breath and sit steadfastly. According to Dogen, this is not learning meditation, even though these are instructions for Zazen for everyone. He says it's simply the Dharma gate of enjoyment and ease. It's the practice realization of complete enlightenment. coolness and balance in the midst of this world. Yeah, returning to suchness, returning to thusness, to our balanced state. Chan Master Bajiao entered the hall and, holding up his staff, said, If you have a staff, I'll give you a staff. If you don't have a staff, I'll take a staff away from you. And then, leaning on his staff, he descended from his seat. So this is one of the koans from our study text, Zen Echoes. You know, he's holding his staff. Think of someone on a tightrope, you know, balancing with their pole. It's a staff for balance, for walking, a stick for hiking. Roshi has her staff there in her Dokusan room, and it'll come out later in Ango. Muman comments on this koan. He says, it helps you cross the river where the bridge is broken. It accompanies you as you return to the village on a moonless night. If you call it a stick, you will go to hell as fast as an arrow. Bajiao's staff, Basho's staff, is his walking staff, his teaching staff. If you already have the teachings, if you're clinging to an idea of it, this weighs you down, takes you off balance. You can no longer dwell in suchness, in thusness. And so Basho, if you have that staff, he's going to give you the staff. He'll hit you with the teaching, knock it right out of you. If you already have it, how can you be fresh and ready in this moment? You know, for this beautiful spring day, how can we encounter it? It'll drag you down if you try to cross the river holding on, distract you as you cross Broadway. You know, you'll miss it. The look on your lover's face, the need in your friend, you know, we have to be there. And how can we stand up against this kind of corruption and warmongering? How can we work for a better environment if we're stuck in some idea of what the right thing is? And if we reside in emptiness, Basho takes that away too. Right here on your cushion, you know, in your body, balanced. You know, it's not nothing. It's all of us here. Our 12th century Dharma matriarch, Miaozong, writes a commentary for this koan. She says, when Bajiao raised up his staff, everything in the cosmos was startled. Frogs may have leapt all the way to India. In this startled moment, you can't call it a thing, a teaching, a staff. What is there to realize out there? But she goes on, she says, his eyebrows still rest above his eyes. Still balanced in your body right here. When the bell rings, we'll chant and we'll get up. And 5 centuries later, Master Bao Qi commented on the koan and on Miaozong's commentary as well. She said, when Bajiao lifted up his staff, everything in the world lost its nerve. You know, not veering a hair's breadth from thusness, from this suchness, this threshold place, this place on top of a wave, where we've been residing this morning. We've been returning to this. This isn't back there in the 17th century. She's talking to us right now. And then Bauchi puts herself into her commentary. She says, if I had grabbed it and snapped it in half, what then would he have had to lean on? You know, this fierce woman, right? What strength, this power of this practice, this courage that we show coming here. You know, she grabs it. We can grab it. We are. So balance in our zazen flows along. It's like riding the bike. Breath by breath, the thought comes. We notice it and we let it go. And we come back. That's included. It's not out of balance. That's it. In Kintin, we step forward, and maybe we stumble, and that's included. These forms give us a space to practice this active balance, this flow. But of course, as we walk out the door, we are still part of this practice, this active flow of our lives. Crossing the river, and we have it. Crossing the street outside, and we have this staff to hold on to. If we call it a staff, if we cling to it, then it drags us straight to hell, fast as an arrow. So I'm going to finish with a short poem by Pauline Oliveros. Listening to this space, I sound this space. Listening to the energy of all who are present, I sound this energy. Listening to my listening and your listening, I make music here and now with the assistance of all that there is. I dedicate this music to a world where peace is more exciting than war.